Welcome to Sunday Homilies with me, Father Mike Schmitz. I hope today's homily inspires and motivates you, and I also hope that it leaves you hungry for the one who gave everything to feed you. If you want to get this and other Sunday Mass resources sent straight to your inbox, sign up at ascensionpress.com/Sunday or by texting Sunday to 33777. You can also follow or subscribe in your podcast app for weekly notifications. God bless. So last November, I was invited to go out to New York City to be part of a procession of to say Mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral, and then to be part of a Eucharistic procession downtown New York City. And when I told people about it, they were like very excited about this whole thing and just like really like, that's so cool. You're going to process with our Lord in the Eucharist all through Times Square, this whole thing. And I remember thinking, I don't want to do this. Like, people even ask, like, well, how'd you come up with this idea? I'm like, it's not my idea. In fact, I don't like the idea of this. I like the idea of having Mass. I don't like the idea. Here's why, how I saw it though. I was like, I see it as like ambushing people with Jesus, right? So you just walk into work or you're just kind of walking down the streets of New York City and all of a sudden it's like, poof, there's Jesus. And you're like, what do I do? Because there's a piece there that's like, again, it's a good thing. Adoration, our Lord, processions, great things. But I think there's a problem because a lot of us are ignorant. Like we don't know what's going on. Like, how many people would be, here we are processing with our Lord, and here we are kind of in this triumph. There were 5,000 people who were part of this procession. And so, and there was singing, and there was all a ton of sisters, a ton of lay people, a bunch of priests, comes some bishops. Kind of this, what looked like kind of a triumphant procession. And at the same time, a lot of people had no idea what was going on. So the response, they just didn't know, ignorant or indifferent. I mean, even if you were Catholic, you're like, what do I do? Do I kneel here? Do I bow? Do I make the sign of the, like, there's this ignorance. I don't know what to do. There's indifference. Like, what is that? Doesn't matter to me. Or there even kind of was some antagonism, right? There's some people who were mad that we were there. And I thought of all these things and I thought, why would we have this kind of triumphant procession of Jesus in the Eucharist on the streets of New York City? And I realized kind of quickly that That's not even close to what it was. It was joyful, it was prayerful. That's all it was. It was humbly and joyfully walking with Jesus. There was no triumph there. We basically was the invitation. Okay, we're gonna humbly walk where Jesus would go. We're gonna take Jesus in the Eucharist where Jesus would want to be. That he would want to be among the people on this planet, the people that he came to earth for. So we would walk where Jesus would walk. We would go where Jesus would go. Even though so many people would be ignorant and indifferent and even hostile. And I thought about this because one of my favorite places to go in the world is the Holy Land. And one of my favorite things to do in the Holy Land is do the Via Dolorosa, right? So the Way of the Cross through the streets of Jerusalem. And it's amazing to be able to go and carry the cross through these windy streets. But it's kind of one of the things I found out the very first time we ever did it is that it was really difficult to pray because in the Way of the Cross, you're often just in people's way because they're just trying to go to work, right? They're just trying to do their things. They're trying to live their lives. And here are these Christians who are carrying these crosses and praying and blocking traffic and getting in people's way. And I realized, oh my gosh, this is probably how it would have been for the original Way of the Cross, for the original Via Dolorosa. Are you mad? So I always used to think that here is Jesus. He's doing the event that changed the world. He's in the midst of doing the event that is saving the world. He's carrying his cross all the way to Golgotha, where he's going to lay down his life for the redemption of all of humanity. You would think that is kind of a big deal. It is a big deal. But for most of the people, maybe for every person, they were either ignorant, had no idea what was going on. I mean, even those who were his closest friends, maybe even those who were with him at the foot of the cross would have said, this just looks like he's dying. It just looks like failure. Just looks like defeat. Just looks like death. And they'd be ignorant of what's actually happening or would be completely indifferent. Sometimes I imagine that the whole city came out and just everyone's yelling at Jesus. Everyone's spitting at Jesus. Everyone's, you know, throwing stuff at Jesus. There were some people who did that. There were the ones who hated, right? So you have ignorance, you have hate, but also you probably just have a lot of people who are really, really, really just indifferent. Because, and this is the thing, there would be nothing impressive about Jesus carrying his cross. This whole passion we just heard, There'll be nothing impressive about Jesus' crucifixion. In fact, so just a couple weeks ago, a bunch of our students and our missionaries and Lauren, we all went to Poland, on this pilgrimage to Poland. And one of the places we went to was the John Paul II Shrine. And it was this really massive church, this really massive shrine. But the thing that struck me the most out of this entire place with all this beautiful art and all this kind of eccentric art was this crucifix that was, you walk in right off to the left in this side chapel, there's this crucifix that just struck me. And it didn't strike me because it was really beautiful. And it didn't strike me because it was very had a lot of wounds. Sometimes you have those kind of crucifixes. It struck me because it was too realistic. What I mean by that is, well, it had actual hair, which was kind of weird. That was just weird. But also, the hair was just kind of gross. And even just the shape of Jesus's body and as it hung on the crucifix there was just kind of really gross. And not explicit, with wounds all over the place, just kind of all the crucifixes we have, a lot of the ones we have are very aesthetic, right? They're even if Jesus is dying on the cross and there he is hanging by those nail marks, it's still kind of still kind of impressive, right? It still has a sense of beauty to it. This was no, this is just a guy who's dying on the cross and his life is slowly being taken from him. And it reminds me of what we just heard in Isaiah 53. Right? Isaiah 53 says that there will be nothing in him that will make us look at him. In fact, I'm talking to some of the students about this crucifix and the John Paul II shrine. The word that came up was repulsive. Yeah, that's exactly what Isaiah 53 says. It says there was in him no stately bearing, nor appearance to make us look at him. His appearance, no appearance that would attract us to him. He was spurned and avoided by men, a man of suffering, accustomed to infirmity, one of those from whom men hide their faces, spurned, and we held him in no esteem. This is maybe my favorite crucifix I've ever seen in my life because I hated it, but I didn't want to leave it. Because I realize this, in our world, what do we love? In our world, we love power, right? We love strength. In our world, we love health, and we love youth, we love beauty. In our world, we love success. But Jesus draws us to himself, how? By his defeat. Jesus draws us to himself involuntarily embracing ugliness. That on the cross, he's beaten. I don't just mean he's been beat up. I mean, he is beaten. He has nothing left. In fact, that's the whole process of crucifixion, right? Is they take so much, the Romans would take so much from you so that you literally stopped living because there's no life left. They took every little ounce of life, every piece of strength. They took every amount of beauty and just twisted it and destroyed it and took it away. And that is what won the world. That Jesus in his weakness is what won the world. Jesus in his wounds is what won the world. And we can see this in the worst and weakest moment, Jesus wins the world. And we can see this in the gospel even. I mean, we all know the story of Simon of Cyrene, right? Simon of Cyrene, who carries Jesus' cross. Why does he carry Jesus' cross? Because Jesus cannot carry his own cross. Again, it's not this glamorous moment, not this triumphant moment where Jesus is I can do this. I can carry this thing myself. He's no, he was incapable of lifting this thing. And so they ask Simon of Cyrene, and he carries the cross of Jesus. Have you ever paused to wonder why we know Simon's name? Not only that, but in Mark's gospel, it tells us that Simon was the father of two other people. He was the father of Alexander and Rufus. Have you ever paused and thought, wait, the Bible talks about a lot of anonymous people and just says, there was a woman there. There was a guy right there. Why? When Jesus was carrying his cross, does it name Simon and where he's from and his sons, Alexander and Rufus? The theory is that Mark names Simon and Alexander and Rufus because Mark would know Alexander and Simon and Rufus. Because why? Because Simon and Alexander and Rufus became Christians. Imagine this. Imagine the first encounter that this man, Simon, and his two sons, Alexander and Rufus, had with Jesus was a beaten Jesus, was a defeated Jesus, was not a beautiful, was not a preaching, healing, not a miracle-working Jesus. Not a successful Jesus, but a defeated, failure Jesus. And somehow, they recognized the Messiah. somehow in the midst of what a bunch of people who are ignorant, have no idea what's going on, or indifferent, or even hostile, these three men, their first encounter with Jesus was it with the defeated Christ, with God who, yes, is fully God and is truly the God of joy, but also is the man of sorrows. So here's the question, this last thing. How many of us, even though Jesus is right there, we miss the hidden Jesus? We're ignorant. How many of us are indifferent to the suffering Jesus? How many of us actually hate the defeated Jesus? I don't want him like that. How many of us are willing to walk with a rejected Jesus? How many of us are willing to choose the abandoned Jesus? How many of us are willing to love the only real Jesus? Again, truly God, man of joy, but also the man of sorrows. Who in his defeat, what does he do? Well, Isaiah 53 goes on. He says, if he gives his life as an offering for sin, he shall see his descendants in a long life, and the will of the Lord will be accomplished through him. That's what happened in his defeat. Because of his affliction, he shall see the light in fullness of days. Through his suffering, my servant will justify many, and their guilt he shall bear. Therefore, I will give him his portion among the great, and he shall divide the spoils with the mighty. Because he surrendered himself to death and was counted among the wicked. Remember, all the things we love, health and youth and power and strength and success, but he surrendered himself to death, counted among the wicked, he shall take away the sins of many and win pardon for their sins. Jesus failed. But in the worst and weakest and most wounded moment, he won the world. And he won the ignorant. And he won the indifferent. And he even won those who hated him. And maybe by his wounds, he can even win you. Maybe in his weakness, in this worst moment, he can even win your heart.